We are WNSG. AM 1570, Tassel, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are positively no longer in Baltimore. We're in Eldersburg. We're up here at beautiful 1623 Brewing. I'm having beer. There's ice cold. This is a milk stout here at 1623 Brewing. We've had a good time here. This is going to be the final segment probably of my life or my career because we're going to be celebrating 40 years of friendship, of lager, of nights in Scranton, Pennsylvania together. We've done a lot of things together, this trio here. David Abrahams, Richard Abrahams, two of my oldest friends in the world, and they have decided to come out and relive something that I don't know that I talk about every day. People come to me every day and like, yeah, you've been to Super Bowls, you've been to concerts, you've been this, you know famous people like John Allen, you've been around the world and all that. People, the Live Aid thing, and you're wearing the London Live Aid shirt here.
A little tight.
I went to Live Aid in Philadelphia. I'm very proud of that. I have my ticket stubs. I have a review that I wrote that I'm going to share for the very... I haven't read it yet because I'm so embarrassed by it because I know how terrible it's going to be that that I know this. But you guys did something incredible in the summer of 85. I had graduated high school on June 3rd of 85. I had three tickets for Live Aid. I don't know how I went up with three. But my brother, Jeff, my stepbrother, and my girlfriend then, mother of my child, Michelle, we got in the car, and we drove up to JFK in the morning, probably at 6 in the morning. And I have two big memories of that day that I shared with John a couple hours ago that I'll share with you fellas because you weren't with me.
Right.
First was we pulled over wherever you pee up on 95, like the Chesapeake House or whatever those houses were, and it was just fog everywhere. It was July morning. Yeah. It was a hot-ass day, but on 95, there was fog on the road early in the morning because we left before, like, really crack of dawn. It was, like, dark when we left in the morning. Got up, got a great parking spot right by the Spectrum. We parked before it was messy. Yep. We were in our seats inside watching Status Quo and watching the first part, Adam and the Ants, at 8:20 in the morning.
Yep.
I was watching Adam and the Ants on the screens inside of JFK, and there were no, everybody's drinking, partying. We were 12 hours from Led Zeppelin coming on, but I experienced Live Aid. I got my ticket ripped, and I have my two tickets here. This is the ticket that got wet when I was, the other memory I have of that day was being at Crosby, Stills, and Nash. These are the two tickets right here.
I want to see.
So but this one is mint condition. I'm not going to let you touch this. It's got hard quarters.
I want the water.
This is probably only a $200 ticket. Wow. This is probably a $500 ticket.
Ticketron.
So Ticketron stubs.
These are Ticketron stubs that I had. These are the legit Live Aid. So we, you know, you were there. I was there. You were in London. So these are my two tickets that I have. This is what else I have from that day. I have two bumper stickers that I got on the way in. It says, I saw Live Aid. This is Power 99. Oops, wrong. Did this one upside down. This one's upside down. No, this one's upside down. I'm all reversed. There we go.
Good.
Fine. And this is Philadelphia, July 13, 1985. Oh, and to show they're legit, you can save money at Pizzazz on the back. Get 50 cents off with your Taco Bell Pizzazz. And this one just has, like, I don't know, some stout on the back of it or something like that, some blood from the 80s. And then the other thing I have from that day, the Philadelphia Daily News would usually replate, is what we called the newspaper business, which was the front page. Right. They would put the Phillies on the front or the Eagles on the front if you were up there on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. This is my Feed the World Philadelphia Daily News, and it says right here, the drawing of JFK Stadium will help you find your seat. And nobody had seats.
Yeah.
I was in WN up here in row 60. I was underneath the press box. Imagine that.
Okay.
I was under the second E in Feed the World. It said Feed the World. I was under the second
find
E.
Yourself.
So I was at, you know, about the 40-yard line or so that day. I don't have any pictures. I didn't bring a camera. You know, they would have taken it away from me, and I tried to take it in. Mm-hmm. But these are what I have, and then the last thing I have, and I'll share this with you a little later on, because you guys have a whole bag of show and tell. Mm-hmm. Richard and David went to London. I found my Choice magazine, and Richard, you remember this well. Mm-hmm. This was a fellow out in Pikesville and Owings Mills. David Russell was his name.
Oh, yeah.
And Jamie Allen. They published this Choice magazine. It was a rock and roll magazine. John Allen, my lifer, dearest friend, when I finally opened this 4 days ago, when I text you, I knew that I had written a really, really horrible, horrible review of Live Aid. I was 16 years old, okay? So this is a month after I graduated high school. You saw it on TV, but what was Live Aid really like? So you guys are going to ask me what I remember about the day. I remember two things, the fog, and I remember being in the shower on the 15-yard line on the field because it was so hot when Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young were playing Southern Cross. So I was in there. I have been around the world. You know, so I was in there getting wet, looking for that. So those are my two memories. Luckily for you two fellas, I wrote it all down back when I was 16. This is exactly what I think. I haven't read it because I read the first paragraph and I went, I was so 16 years old, I panned Live Aid. I shat upon Live Aid. So 40 years later, I'm going to read this. I've shown my paraphernalia, but I love you guys. David, you're a lawyer. Richard, you're off living your life. I run into you at various concerts. We had a crab cake together a couple summers ago. I cannot think of Live Aid, even though I wasn't with you. You were with me, and I was with you. Right. We were like best friends, and you were there in London. And until I talked to you 48 hours ago, Richard, I forgot that David passed out and was given up to the barristers in London. And the guys with the little pony clubs came looking for you. So I don't know your story. John has hung around to hear your story through chicken wings and pretzels out here at 1623. But I've got a beer, and you got stories to tell, and you got show and tell. So it's good to have you. David, a pleasure,
Thank
man, always.
Good to see you, brother.
Richard, happy 40th anniversary of the greatest concert I don't say of our lifetime because Woodstock happened during, not your watch probably, but our watch.
It wasn't Live Aid, though.
But of what we could have attended, and John and I did 15 minutes on the Ozzy thing last week and thought, oh, we effed that up. The Zeppelin O2 show was now 20 years ago.
That's unreal.
And I didn't get to that. But I do, Steve Gorman was standing on the stage for that one, so I do have a link to that one. But Live Aid in London, when you tell people, your friends, that you were there, I don't know anybody that was even in Philadelphia other than Chris Emery. You know, 40 years later, a lot of those folks are dead, gone, dispersed. But we were still young enough and sexy enough. I was 16. You were about 19, 18, 19. You were 15. Yeah, you were younger than me. And your parents put you on a plane and sent you to London. So
They let us.
They let you go. And I remember when you saying we're going to London, I'm like,
what?
These some crazy MFers here. You know what I mean? These are my kind of guys. And 40 years later. You did. Yeah, great, great parents, great family. And so love to you, man. The microphone's yours. Tell my audience your Live Aid story, Richard.
This doesn't happen in, 2025. You know, parents don't go ahead and say, sure, fly halfway across the world, go to a concert.
I think you have
my parents.
I think you have to understand the most important thing is this was 1985, before the internet, before cell phones. And even Bob Geldof and Bill Graham's idea to do a global concert and televise it, through satellite and make it a world event. I mean, there were 190 million viewers.
It was incredibly ambitious.
Unlike
rock star. Bob Geldof breathed this thing mid-year, and it became something, right?
And unlike Woodstock, which was only 16 years earlier, this was for a cause. And I learned something about my love affair with music. And that was simply that music will take a person back to a certain place or a certain time. It will change a mood. And what Bob Geldof did that day is he put people into action to highlight what was going on in Ethiopia. That 100,000 people were dying a month. And a year earlier with the Band-Aid song, Feed the World.
Feed the World. There it is right there. Right.
That money was supposed to go completely to the famine effort. And the record company, because of the success of MTV pushing it against Gen Xers like us, all of a sudden he was like, sawed off mites. That's what they say in British speak. We're going to do a live concert, and you can't take any of that revenue. And that's where the idea, when Bob Geldof spoke to Bill Graham, to say, we need to do this global jukebox and get it televised. And I know here in the U.S., it was ABC Television. The MTV, I think, was what, in maybe its fourth year? 81 was the first year for MTV.
MTV hosts were there.
It was a very different time and place in this world that we don't know of today, because there were no cell phones, pagers, no internet. It was none of that. It had to be done through television. So,
and everyone stayed home, glued to the television.
Exactly.
But anyways, as the story goes, I had a friend, because you and I used to, we met each other sleeping out for tickets, who brokered tickets, and said that he could get tickets to Live Aid, and I really wanted to see the show. And he said that he could get tickets for, or had tickets for the London show. Now, understand this, again, before the internet, he reserved these block of tickets for the Live Aid show in Wembley Stadium in London over a telex line.
Yeah.
So he offered to me that he would give two of the tickets, and I had to buy them from him. I'm like, all right, fine. I got to ask my parents if I can do this. And my mother's response was, as I ran into her at the grocery store, I said, Mom, I want to take the Dave to London. She goes, I'll talk to your father, but it's all right. You boys have your passports. If you want to go, go.
Yeah.
Okay, now here, this is the week before the show, okay? Yeah. And we didn't have flights. We had nothing. I knew that I can get tickets.
I remember when you called me. You're yes. like,
I'm going to go. Yes. Right. When I finally solidified that not only did I have
the
permission.
You're a guy that made stuff happen. If you said you were going to do it,
I'm going to
do it.
I'm going to do it.
We both have had 40 years of that, 60 years of that, quite frankly.
Exactly. Yep. So.
You booked your flights July?
We booked our flights
a
few days before, on the Monday before the show.
Or the budget carrier, People's Express, remember those guys?
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You went over on a cheap. Yeah, you were not on the Concorde.
Yeah, no, we're not on the Concorde.
You were not on Phil Collins's.
We were paying for our meal there.
We were not on the Concorde.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, being teenagers, it's like we're paying out of our own money to do this.
So you were 20 and you were 15.
Yes, sir.
All right, summer of 85.
Yeah. So we ended up
getting... And Stan's good with this.
Labe was absolutely...
Stan was good. And look, we had different kinds of parents. This is 1985 we're talking
about. Oh, man. God bless Lightfoot Court. You know, all
that's it. That's it. So we ended up booking on People's
These
Express.
These guys grew up by the quarry, which what is now the quarry. You were the only Jewish people I knew. I mean, it was 1982. Yep. I'm 13. I'm from Dundalk.
Uh-huh.
And you brought me into your home and your family. I always say to my wife all the time about the Jewish faith, it's so full of love. You know, I had a Jewish girlfriend. It was just, you brought me into your home and your mother was offering me lamb chops. I never had a lamb chop in my life. And your mother's like, sit down. I'll bring you some food, you know?
Of course.
And I think I had dark beer. I had a Beck's Bock for the first time in my life in your kitchen. And a Grolsch. I was telling that story about beer.
The wire talks.
You guys were like, I wore something for you today. Richard. Because I know of all the stories you'll tell of Live Aid, some people are into Freddie Mercury, some people are into David Bowie, and I know you said you saw my Thomas Dolby David Bowie story, and you were part of that over there. You were a Who guy, dude. You were a Daltrey guy.
Yes,
you were a Who guy. I brought my my Roger Daltrey Ride a Rock Horse belt buckle here. This is my Pacifica 1976 Pacifica there.
Very nice.
So, you know, I collect these.
That's great stuff.
These are part of my collection.
That's great stuff.
And if you look, I mean, Roger almost wants to kiss you in there if you look at Roger. I mean, Roger's right
that's
up
my
there.
Man. Yeah.
So I wore this for you, but when I went this weekend and sort of – I didn't watch it all. I was reading more of the stories about how Status Quo and Style Council said we would have rehearsed more if we would have known how big the
audience was. A lot of the artists came
out. Phil Collins said, I would have learned the opening part of rock and roll had I really, you know, like, I would have done it the right way had I known. I don't know that any of them, even Elton John being magnanimous with George Michael and saying, let's do Don't Go This, Let the Sun Go Down on Me, that Freddie Mercury's star would rise to the point where the Radio Gaga moment. I remember the Radio Gaga moment.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, I was in Philly watching it, and I remember the Radio Gaga moment.
Everyone's going like this.
And Bono doing Bad.
Yes.
And Paul McCartney doing Let It Be when it got dark. Because we're in Philly and it was the afternoon.
Right.
And it was 3 p.m,
and, it's dark
and McCartney's doing Let It Be, and you're closing London. It's all coming back to me now, not even on DVD. It's coming back to me from my seat at JFK Stadium where I experienced the entire day. You guys had, what do you remember about it, and what are you getting together as brothers all of your lives? Do you talk about it much, or is it every July 13th probably?
Oh, it comes up quite a bit with this guy. One thing I remember, Nestor, it was hot as hell that day.
In London. And
in London, it really was. Yeah, you know, talking about, you know, it's and I the one thing that I do remember, again, we are, you know, about probably 20 feet from the stage. We're packed in.
You guys are really clear. You're in all the videos. You were wearing red.
You can see us.
Wearing red shirts.
American flags.
Our mother bought us those shirts before we went over. So maybe if she shot it,
every time
find us.
We watched the tape after that, Richard, because I had the videotape,
Richard
would say, there we are, there we are, there we are, there we are, because you stood out.
Yes.
If you look at the video and it's not you know, HD.
There's a David Bowie banner.
From here to that television, you were from the middle of the front of the stage.
Correct.
Because you were young, dumb, full of vigor.
Yeah.
And you were the ones that – you were the pushy Americans.
Absolutely. Right. Well, I also helped. They were the one that probably the first, what, 250, 500 in?
Right.
We got there really, really early.
Go through this. Well,
so
you flew over on a cheap airline.
I
always thought you had rich parents, but what do I know? I'm from Dundalk, you know, so.
Hey, man, we pay for this with our bar mitzvah money, right?
Right.
Exactly.
But you did fly. You did it backpackers.
Exactly.
Right.
Maybe with parents that gave you a little bit of money, but you didn't go over their bankroll.
No, we did not.
And the first night, we stayed in a youth hostel.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I walked in. I think there's a chalk outline on the
ground. We're at the St. Regis. Right. Yeah, yeah. You're on the wrong side.
We weren't in St. and five-star hotels.
Woke up the next morning. I was like, hell with this, man.
I stayed with you in Scranton. I know you're not bougie.
No, not at all. Well, here's the fortunate thing. And this is really part of the story of the things that we remember. It wasn't just the show itself, but it was getting to the show and afterwards.
Yeah. Well, Wembley's not in the middle of anything.
I've been to Wembley for football
a couple years ago.
It's way on the outskirts.
It's Westminster to Baltimore.
Right.
It really is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
yes.
We ended up, the telex for the tickets was reserved at a place called the Keith Prowse Booking Company. That was in a place called Shepherd's Bush, who ironically, that's where the Who is from, Shepherd's Bush.
Okay.
So when we woke up from the used hostel on Friday morning, because we flew in on a Thursday, we went over to Keith Prowse to go collect our tickets for the show for Saturday. And we walk into the lobby. I said, my name is Richard Abrahams. Here's the telex number. And a lady at the counter there, she goes back to get the tickets. And she comes back. She goes, I'm sorry, sir, but the tickets are not here.
Yeah.
I'm like, what do you mean they're not here?
Oh, here we go.
We flew all there from the
stage.
Wait, right.
Mm-hmm. So I said, what do you mean? I said, we're reserved on telex. This is the name in the account. And next thing I know, she goes to the back. I look over at David. He's in tears. And I'm like, you know, we flew all the way.
Is it day before the show?
This is Friday. The show is Saturday.
Okay.
So we had to go pick up the tickets because it wasn't like today where you just scan
a code.
Call,
yeah.
And you probably got there Wednesday or Thursday, right? Like, you weren't like in Churchill's bunker. You were there for the show.
We were there for one reason. We had a mission
to go see this show.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Exactly. This was not a social studies class.
No. This is no social crisis. Just another tricky day for you.
Right, exactly. All right.
So, you know, the lady disappears. She comes back with a gentleman. He goes, let me see what I can do. He goes back, and about 15 minutes, the guy walks back, and he says, sir, we're so sorry, sir. He goes, the tickets were released. However, we're going to give you two complimentary tickets to the show. Please enjoy the show on our behalf. We're so sorry for the mistake. I'm looking at David. I'm like, did we just win the lottery? I said, instead of having to go home and pay $250 a ticket, we just got free tickets to the show that we flew here to be to go.
But wait, there's more.
Okay.
There is more. So I'm going to pull this out.
This is where the beer has to get all, even though we're at 16, 20. Richard Abrahams is here. David Abrahams, they're brothers. I've known them for 45 years. They've been my pals. Man, look at this.
The program saved
it's a lot.
This is the program. Man, where's John Allen? Did John leave and not see any of this stuff? John, you're looking at this online. Look out. Look. Oh, my God. This is such a honey. I'm afraid to touch it. Okay.
No, you can absolutely.
Go ahead. Where are your tickets?
Well, anyways, this is the handbill that they hand. I'm going to pull this out. This is the actual handbill.
All right. So this is the handbill from Live Aid.
Right.
This is the program, the UK program.
And it's
Live
not even Aid. Complete because they didn't know all the artists.
Of course they didn't.
The back, and it shows the Philadelphia Without Times, and then that's at least what they knew was going to be the set times for the British.
This is amazing stuff. All right.
So here's the story. Okay.
Here's the Wonka tickets.
This is the tickets
they
gave
us. Wonka
now look at the portal that we had to end up in. Can you read the letter?
Turnstile F.
F. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is this. This is actually the actual, map of the stadium.
Right.
The middle was general admission. If you look at Turnstile F, it's right near the stage.
Okay.
Right on the side of the stage.
I got it right here.
So, David and I get there at 6 o'clock in the morning. They open the gates at 8. The show's supposed to start at 10. I think 10.
Beware, pirate program sellers.
So, when they open the gate, David and I ended up right in front of the stage.
Okay.
Yeah.
We are 15 to 20 feet from the stage.
And now you're like, I can't pee for 14 hours.
Well, pretty much. You know, you're knocked out. You're not getting water. You're not getting food. You're just.
You're getting nothing.
You got all these pictures.
You're
gone.
And that was taken on a Instamatic camera before the days of cell phones.
Now, did you take the camera inside?
Oh my God.
Look at these pictures.
Right.
Look at this stuff that they got.
Look, this is us.
Look at this stuff.
Look at this one. That's Portal F. That's us waiting outside.
Portal F. There you go. Wembley Stadium. And, dude, you gotta scan all of this and get it up onto Facebook, and I'll share it for everyone.
Of course. Oh, yeah. This is interesting.
It's a kid with an Oriole hat?
6 o'clock in the morning. Look what we're running into.
This is 2 years after we won our last World Series. It's a guy with an Oriole hat.
Yeah. Summer 85. He probably looked big Fred Lynn fan, probably.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Look at all of these pictures. So, did you took pictures during the show. So
yes. Absolutely. Yes.
There's Geldof. Is that Geldof?
That's Bob. Adam Ant right there.
That's Adam Ant and Bob Geldof.
Oh, look at Adam Ant and Bob Geldof on stage at Live Aid. Look at this. So you guys went over, you're in the front of the stage before. So let me get the program out, because the program will tell me what order. It's right here. I got it right here. Status Quo opened the show,
right?
Style Council, Ultravox, Boom Rat, Spandau Ballet. At some point, Adam Ant was in that part. It got added in there. Elvis Costello, Nick Kershaw, Sade, Sting and Phil Collins, and then Sting got on the Concorde. Yep. Howard Jones.
It was actually Phil Collins on the Concorde.
Yes,
Brian Ferry, fantastic.
Yep. Right.
Paul Young, who I saw last week down at Wolf Trap with the Wang Chung guys.
Okay.
U2 played at 520. Yep. Dire Straits.
Money for Sting Nothing. Money for Nothing. That was the first time that was ever played live with Sting.
With Sting, yeah.
Sting doing I Want My MTV. Right.
My MTV.
That's right.
Yes, Dire Straits, Queen. That was now the Bowie thing. We got to talk about the Bowie thing for a minute. You saw the Dolby piece.
Yes.
Did you know about that before 3 days ago or no?
No.
Okay. So Thomas Dolby moved to Baltimore going on 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I got wind that he was in town, and I'm a fan, and he was a professor over at Hopkins, and we got connected through a mutual friend through Living Classrooms. Yeah. And Thomas did my show as, I'm here, yay, mate, you know, whatever. And I struck up a friendship with him, and I said, you live downtown, and he didn't drive at the time because he's emission free and he's a professor. So he said, I've never been to a Ravens game. You teach me football.
That's great.
So
that's
when Jen was at the depths of her, she was in the hospital. I thought she was literally going to die. It was December of 15, her second battle. It was the day that Ryan Mallett beat the Steelers.
Check that out.
It was Christmas week.
Right.
And Dolby met me at my house, and my wife had been in and out of the hospital. She was very, very sick at this point. Mm. But we had all of these Ravens hats that Marvin Lewis sent me in a box.
Yep.
When Marvin was in Cincinnati, Marvin texted me one day and said, what's your address? I sent it to him. I'm like, what am I getting? He sent me a box of 25 Ravens hats that he had in his closet.
Oh, God.
And this isn't, you know, so I had all these
He's
hats.
His house,
so Dolby comes over to the house, and I had all these hats. And I'm like, pick one. It's yours. Oh, I can't keep it. Keep it. So Dolby has one of Marvin's hats.
Okay.
Dolby picked the Marvin hat, the Raven hat that he wanted. It was a very nice day in December, as I remember it. And Dolby and I walked out of my house, and we're walking through the neighborhood. And I had been at the hospital. My wife had been through living hell. And we're just talking. And I said, you know, I was a music critic back in the day, and I actually interviewed David Bowie. And Dolby, being who he is, didn't jump out at the Bowie reference. I remember this because, you know, I said to him, I said, I interviewed Robert Plant, I interviewed Jimmy Page, I interviewed David Bowie.
Yep.
And just as a matter of, like, my pride in having interviewed David Bowie, he doesn't say anything to me. It's 2015. We went, sat in the game. We had the greatest day. He came into the show the next week and talked about his experience of American football.
Yep.
My wife survived. Thank God for that. Niels, I love you. And so, fast forward years later, Dolby's at my house having dinner. And it came up.
Yeah.
And he's like, I was the band leader for Bowie that day. And I'm like, you were the what to the what?
I got to hear this story, right?
And I'm like, what? And my dude Ace is at the house, and I surprised Ace because Tom was at my house having dinner, and I invited Ace over, and Ace is a big Tom fan. Ace walked in and saw Tom Dolby in my kitchen. He's like,
flipping.
What? We're vegetarians. You know, it was like a whole thing, right? So Dolby didn't tell me the whole story, and then I invited him out. And when I invited him out, I had him on Zoom. The one I sent you was a Zoomer.
A Zoomer, right.
And the reason was Rundgren and Adrian Ballou were doing a Rams Head Bowie thing. Okay. And Dolby was recruited to do one piece of that. She was a special guest at the Rams Head show. Okay. And I said to Dolby, what are you going to do? He's like, well, I played with David at Live Aid. And he's like, I have all my Polaroids.
Polaroids, right.
So, right.
Yeah.
Dolby, like you, on the same day, had a camera like this and took pictures. Probably he was with Bowie in the helicopter, leaving from London. Bowie was between bands. You and I camped out for Sirius Moonlight. We had front row tickets in 84, right?
Yep.
So in the summer of 84, two nights with Bowie. I was in the front row in the eighth row. I went the eighth row with you. We went the second night together. Yeah. I was in the front row the first night at the Sirius Moonlight tour. Mm-hmm. When that tour ended after a year and a half, and they toured the world, it was the biggest act in the world at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's Dance, all of that. Mm-hmm. It's Stevie Ray Vaughan had played all that stuff on Let's Dance.
Yep.
Carlos Alomar was the guitar player on the tour. The tour broke up, and Bowie didn't have a band.
Right.
So it's the summer of 85, and this Live Aid thing's happened, and Bowie didn't have a band.
Scramble.
Bowie reached to Dolby to put a band together.
Yeah.
So this is the story. So Dolby is in London, helicoptering to the show at 2. When did they play? They played at 6:40. No, they played at 7:20.
Right. Yeah.
They had rehearsed a couple of times, and Dolby helicoptered with Bowie, and he said Bowie was so. You can go watch this at Baltimore Positives. Google Thomas Dolby, it'll pop right up. Mm-hmm. He said that Bowie was chain smoking cigarettes in the helicopter because Bowie was so nervous about flying.
The pilot's like, you can't smoke here. He's like, blah, blah, blah. Right, right.
And he said, Dolby said they circled the stadium. He has pictures from above. He has Polaroids from the helicopter.
Like that.
That's crazy.
So Dolby has all of this stuff, and Dolby says, I'm putting together something for Heroes with Bowie.
Yeah.
I went down to Rams Head that night, and I hadn't interviewed Rundgren yet. I talked to Adrian Ballou on the side of the stage by the bathroom in the back of Rams Head.
I'd love to have seen that.
But it was amazing.
I'm sure.
It was amazing. That Bowie night was amazing.
I'm sure.
It was Halloween night about 4 years ago. About 21, 22, somewhere in there.
Yep.
Dolby got inspired because he's friggin' Thomas Dolby. He's a genius. He got inspired by all of his pictures and the music, and he did a 10-minute vignette on that Bowie night where he redid Heroes, showing the pictures that he had in video.
Wow.
I'm sobbing. Literally... Wow. Sobbing at Ram's Head on, and my wife wasn't with me. But you know, the man who saved her life was German. He was a hero. You know, I'm like I said to Thomas, I texted him later, and then I'm like, dude, you had me sobbing.
Yeah.
So a year and a half later, Dolby comes out year and a half ago and did the show at State Fair. We had a long breakfast.
Okay.
And he took this whole Live Aid thing and built it into his tour last year. So if you saw him last year on the tour, he tells these stories of was recruited by David Bowie to do Live Aid.
I did Live Aid.
I was not the star, but I got some really cool shit to show.
Right. It was that.
So Dolby is just an amazing, who lives here in Canton, teaching at Hopkins. He lived in Baltimore 15 years. Mm-hmm. Dolby was a huge part of the Bowie thing. And Dolby told me the story last year, and I know you saw the video of it. He said, we audibled into TVC15. David, we were going to do Scary Monsters or one of those songs that we didn't do.
Yep.
He said, David got up on stage and said, I don't want it. I want TVC15. He said, we had barely rehearsed it. He said, we had barely played it through.
He didn't want to know. It was all greatest hits.
But Bowie liked living on the edge.
Right.
Let me tell you something. Bowie liked everybody tap dancing a little bit.
Heroes was one of the signature moments of that show.
No question.
It really was. I'm talking about everybody.
We can be heroes just for one day.
I would say that was a signature moment. I would say the Queen performance, definitely.
You two doing bad.
You two
doing bad, and that broke them to the world stage. I mean, I know that they were kind of.
We saw them a year later,
but they broke. Right. Absolutely.
They were playing small venues.
And let me tell you what was also unbelievable. Again, hot as hell that day. The Who comes on. They came on. Play Love Rain Over Me. The skies open up. It starts raining. I swear to you, as if
it was the only time we got water the whole day.
The entire crowd down. It was like sort of
now
like.
Now you had a moment. Early. You got to tell your David Abrahams is here, Richard. These are two of my oldest. I'm the third Abrahams brother. I'm the Dundalk brother they didn't know about, the Venezuelan brother they didn't know about. But 40 years ago, these guys were two of my best friends in the world, and we used to go to concerts together. We camped out for tickets together. We went to concerts together. We went to Billy Joel. We went to a million Springsteen. We went to
house
million
parties.
Shows there. House parties.
Dinners at a parent's house.
Oh, man, just the whole deal.
Amnesty the next year.
We went to Amnesty the following June, and I have all my – I should have brought my memorabilia from that. But you had a moment that I have forgotten about. For 40 years, you went to Wembley, you went to London, you got out of bed, you went, you stood in line, you got up in the front of the stage, it was hot as hell. What happened and when, David?
Not exactly my finest moment, my friend.
I'm going to start this, okay?
Hey, you're going to start this?
I'll start it. You can finish it.
Okay.
Now, understand,
I'm
entrusted with a minor in
a
foreign country.
Because I'm at 1623.
Right. Okay. Now. About, I guess it was about 45 to an hour into the show.
No, it was right around when Ultravox went on. So it was probably
so
about
Ultravox,
an hour.
Right about 12:47.
Right about then, exactly.
So
height of the day.
David, all of a sudden, I'm standing next to him, and he collapses. He goes down.
Yeah.
And David had a heat stroke. Now, understand, they weren't watering the crowd like they were in Philly. They were they figured out afterwards, start tossing water bottles in, and we had nothing. We couldn't get out of the crowd to get sustenance, to get water.
Philly, they had that shower in the back.
Correct,
right?
Exactly.
They did not have that.
I mean,
you're
packed in there like you're busted.
Because everybody's pushed up against the fence.
And I'm thinking you're with a bunch of hooligans, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you're Hoot fans, you're in London.
Of course.
Soccer hooligans, it's a rock concert.
Right.
We all had long hair, you know? I still have long hair.
There you go. So Dave passes out. And the crowd there was unbelievable. Everybody was trying to clear to push people back to get him some air. Eventually, we all
picked him up. So it wasn't a Who thing. It was like, help the kid.
No, everybody was helping him. Right.
All right.
So they lifted him up, okay, above, like somebody stage diving. They were holding him up.
Yeah, it was like crowd surfing.
And immediately, the security that's at the front security barrier in front of the stage, we're only 15 to 20 feet from the stage, they see it, and they're motioning for us to pass him over. So I'm like, oh, whatever. So all of a sudden, I see my brother go over the front security barrier, and he's gone. I have no contact, no cell.
But text him, right?
Right.
Not even sound. We didn't even have smoke signals, my friend.
There was no smoke. Not even smoke.
He's gone. Exactly. Your brother's gone.
And I am one. What's up with my brother? Is he all right? Did he die? Two, how am I going to explain this one to my parents? And three, okay, will I ever see him again?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm flipping out for the next hour or so, and then
so
finally.
You missed Boomtown Rats and Spandau Ballet.
Yeah, exactly. I came back to Costello. Exactly. So I was out for this. So I get backstage.
What do you? How long were you out? Do you even know?
You know what? I woke up just as they were escorting me to this like little area, sort of like backing off the side.
So you still knew you were in London.
So exactly. I knew my name wasn't Batman. It was all good stuff like that. But I was definitely feeling like very very jelly lit.
I would always say when we went to the Capitol Center, you'd see casualties.
Right.
You know, you'd see somebody on shrooms just sitting on the side.
This was dehydration, my
right.
friend.
Dehydration.
So, you know, they set me up in this little area stuff. I guess it was probably just for like a little first aid station, artist first station, whatever.
Triage, as it were.
Right. I mean, they're putting cold compresses on my neck. They're giving me water. They're giving me juice, whatever that type of thing. Speaking British to me. Yeah, all right. And I didn't realize where I was. The next thing I know,
it's bloody American.
Like,
they're going to lose it.
Exactly. I see Sting walking by, and then I see George Michael. George Michael looks over and he's like, "You all right, man?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm doing fine."
George Michael asked you how you were.
Yeah, whatever.
And, you know,
well, you weren't with us.
Exactly.
No,
so,
I don't know this is going on.
Right. There's no what's going on.
I mean, I'm shitting myself because how am I going to explain this to my parents that I lost him?
So you're watching Boomtown Rats, Up All Night,
right.
Pretty much by himself.
Spandau Ballet.
Yeah. And he's gone.
Much is true. And you're like, where's my brother? And could he?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
So by some grace of God or something like that, you know, I get better and you know.
Meanwhile, I'm probably watching Cyndi Lauper and Philly or something.
Right. I walk back into the crowd. Actually, it was a good thing that I kind of noticed the surroundings because we were right by the Bowie flag. Walked to the Bowie flag. Sure enough, he's there.
In front of the soundboard.
I had a bunch of boxes. What do they see? Means like these orange juice and stuff like that.
Right, just the juice boxes.
Exactly, stuff like that. So I was like,
I was like, dude,
you will not believe what happened.
Dude, the Who's going to play? Queen's going to do the greatest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yes.
Bowie's going to come. You need to be hydrated. Dude.
I think I got back there maybe just as Spandau Ballet was just getting on.
Okay.
With Elvis.
Yeah, so exactly. You saw Elvis? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right. So I see him walking.
Yeah. I see the park crowd and letting him back because they recognize the kid that went over. Yeah. And I see him coming in from the same area on the corner. Like, if you're looking at the stage on the right-hand side, they had an opening on the right side. And I see them pushing him out over the security barrier again. Like, there's a gate there.
Yeah.
And he's walking back towards me. I'm like, oh, my God, thank God, Dave's alive. And here's the story he tells. I'm like, what happened? And he tells the story.
I told you the story there. So basically, you know, again, they put me in this little triage area there, and you know, it's
so hold
backstage.
On. Sting walked by. George Michael spoke to you. Did you see anybody else or no?
You don't remember?
Have any other
memories? Exactly. 40 years ago, I said those are the two that I remember. You know, exactly. So I mean, there were a bunch of people. Who knows? There could have been other band members and things like that. But it was.
It's funny you say Sting because a year later, and this is where the story can get funny for us. We went to the Amnesty concert.
Right. Amnesty.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The police.
And I had a cousin in Scranton who had a house, and
we slept there.
Tom Robinson got married.
Right,
it was the weekend of Robbie, who gave me my career at the News American.
Yep.
He got married in Clark Summit, Pennsylvania, where my dad was from. Dad had family there, and we stayed on a farmhouse where they did not want us. I had family members that did not want me in the house.
I remember that.
He was just a nasty little drunk uncle. Yeah. It was like literally. Yeah. But we had a free crash pad, and we wound up in a hotel.
Right.
We wound up in a hotel.
Sheridan.
Right. We wound up in a Sheridan in Scranton.
Yeah. Right.
And I went to the wedding, and you guys
drank a lot of
enjoyed
tequila.
Enjoyed the bar, as I remember. Right.
We had a bottle of mezcal.
I have pictures of you in the hotel room that I couldn't find today, but when I find them, you'll get them.
No way.
I have pictures of you two in the hotel room.
Yeah.
Not you two, the two of you. Before we saw you two. Yeah,
that's right, right.
That Amnesty show, I was a full-fledged, I was at the Sun by then.
Yep.
So in this is May of 86 was the Amnesty concert.
Yep, yep.
That, I had a press pass. That day I met Sting.
Yep.
I met Yoko Ono. And this is the craziest thing that you'll say, like, celebrity thing.
Yeah.
I hung out with Christopher Reeve. Christopher Reeve was...
That's ironic when you knew about that.
Christopher Reeve was in the VIP area down there. And for some reason, I befriended him.
Yeah. Superman.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was just Christopher Reeve.
This is Superman.
Kevin Bacon was running around there.
Yeah.
I have autographs from Little Steven, and I didn't know enough about the E Street Band.
Yeah.
Wow. He was doing Sun City, and he was out of the band at that point.
Yes, I remember that.
And Peter Gabriel played. I didn't meet him or anything. Mark Rivera played. I have pictures from that day. U2 played. I was not in the room with them.
Yep.
But Lou Reed signed an autograph for me. One of the ladies of rock, Joni Mitchell, was backstage there.
Joni was there, right?
Yoko Ono, Sean Lennon was backstage that day. Yeah. But I remember talking to Sting, and I remember literally hanging out with Christopher Reeve for hours.
Wow!
Backstage,
he just buddied
that
into
day.
You. He just sank
because
into
the, I, it was like there were. It was like this, where there was a program, and I came back at. I watched Peter Gabriel with you guys.
Yes,
I have pictures
of that.
Peter Gabriel doing Sledgehammer and Biko, and he did a Big Time was the single at that time. In Your Eyes, he was doing all of that.
Yep.
And then the U2 and the Police, that was the last time the Police played again before I saw them in Vancouver.
Right.
24 years later, right? 2010. But the Police and U2 that day, we did that show together.
Yes, sir.
I mean, in two summers, you guys attended two of the most amazing, and I did too, I guess, but I've always been envious of the London thing.
Yeah.
And you guys probably have a little envy of the Philly thing because you're a Zeppelin guy, and you know what I mean? And I told John this a couple hours ago, the Philadelphia side, I mean, I remember all these acts, and I've watched the DVD and like all of that, but Madonna was the biggest star in the world.
Yeah, yes. She was
so
huge.
When she played at like 4 in the afternoon, which, you know.
Didn't she come back on the stage a second time, though, I thought?
I think she played after maybe McCartney and them ended.
Right.
Because the way they timed it was McCartney. What are we going to do from that? Let's go
with
Madonna. Let's go with Madonna. Let's go with Madonna. Yeah, let's put Madonna in at that point.
Yeah.
And that's when it got crazy in Philly, where it went from like Madonna to Clapton to Duran Duran, you know, it was getting it darker in Philly.
Yeah.
And because of the mix of music, whether it was the Temptations that played, Patti LaBelle played, Lionel Richie was a big part of it in Philadelphia as well. But that handover to Madonna Madonna was the big, the green jacket she wore, and it, you know, get into the groove and all of that. It was just such a star power thing, and I guess 40 years later, to have Queen have this biopic history that's based on that day, day, and you two, for both of those concerts, really to move them. And in a place where, like, Elton John and George Michael, iconic, Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. I mean, it really bookends rock and roll to have been a part of that.
Without a doubt.
Well,
it
brought you two on the world stage.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, Bad is what brought. But I tell you, I mean, we went, obviously, for the music. What we didn't realize was that we would be part of an event that shows up in this day in history.
Right.
You know, all
every
those things.
Year. July 13th, that's what it means.
It really is. And, you know, had we known that, I mean,
you would have taken better pictures.
And we would have taken better pictures.
You would have taken better pictures.
I'm going to show you
something. I see Adam Ant here dancing. You know, they took a camera in and they have nothing of McCartney. But, you know, all of it is it's a part of history in that when, if you were on a timeline this weekend, all the videos showed up. None of it's in high def.
Right,
all the storytelling is there, whether it's Midge Ure telling a story or Bob Geldof.
Yes.
I mean, all of these, many of these people have lived longer. Roger May.
Of course.
All the people that have lived long enough. Right. I mean, we lost Tina Turner, right? I was thinking about that.
Yeah,
and her doing the thing with Mick Jagger and doing It's Only Rock and Roll.
Yes.
And the
dancing
thing that
the
they did. But I, the, 40 years later, I mean, here's my offer to you. I have two Live Aid tickets in Philly. You have two from London. I'll trade you a Philly for a London. You can say no. It's okay.
This
I'll
right here.
But give me those. Tell us some stories. What do you got there?
It's ironic that, again, it was a day that changed music forever, was Live Aid. It moved multitudes into action. And
you keep
unlike,
coming back to that, and I appreciate that.
Because
it was
important.
A concert, but
it was,
but it
much
was,
more
it
than
a cause.
Concert.
It really was.
But it was a day that changed all three of our lives,
yeah.
Whether we were at Wembley Stadium or in Philadelphia. So I was visiting a friend's mother who's very ill, and they print this little thing called the Daily Chronicle at her senior care facility.
Okay,
and it shows on it, it says, on this date. It goes through different things in 1865 about P.T. Barnum.
Frank Sinatra recorded his first single
for
the bottom of my heart.
Then read what it says for 1985.
The Live Aid benefit concert was held simultaneously at Wembley Stadium in London and JFK Stadium in Philadelphia to raise funds for famine relief in Ethiopia, featuring performances by iconic artists like Queen, U2, Madonna, and Elton John. Live Aid captivated an estimated 1.9 billion viewers across 150 nations, raised $100 million, and 40 years later, we still talk about it.
And this is not without the internet. That's the amazing thing, that we could achieve that. We put a man on the moon, and Bob Geldof and Bill Graham produced Live Aid.
So there you have it right there. There's
the
two Wembleys and the two Philadelphia Live Aid stories and the program. This program saved lives. What else do you have? You have your shirt. You have one shirt left?
No, I have all my other shirts and stuff, but these are other things that I wanted to show you. This is the stationery from, this is one more
store. This is the Holiday Inn you stayed at.
Where we stayed at, right.
All right, Swiss Cottage.
Yep.
This is a souvenir from Nestor Aparicio.
I gave you that?
Yes.
Yeah. I gave it.
Right, I got that. And then in the tube, that's from the photographs.
I brought you a souvenir.
I took this off of the one.
I told you I love you. It was true.
I took this one of the Life
Post. Dude, this has got to be a $1,000 post or so. Dude, this is a wet.
Yeah, rock and roll.
Dude, this is... This is probably a
$5,000
special
notice to Capitol Heart. Rock and roll to Wembley. Wembley shows the tube stop, the tape.
Valid until July 14th.
To get the Live Aid.
Why not give Live Aid what
you
save?
There you go.
Is that cool?
Take good care of that.
I took that off.
Get that smudge off.
No, it was. I took it off of a light post, whatever. And I said, Dave, we've got to take that one home. That's a cool thing.
So if
it stayed in there for all those years.
Now, if you want to hear another kind of funny story, sort of lucky day type thing.
Oh, yes.
This is
the best part.
So after we get out of, we spent the night at this, it's probably a place for... You know, wayward men or something like that. But so that's how I ended up there. Was basically.
But you were at the Bates before that.
Well, exactly. We were at the Bates Motel before that. So after we, you know, get the tickets from Keith Sprouse, walking down the street, and you know, my foot hits something, and I look down, and there's a wallet.
No joke.
There's the wallet. So you know, pick it up. You know, I'm looking for any signs of like cards, IDs, and stuff. There's nothing in there. You know, I think one.
It's a billfold full of cash.
So I open it up. There's £300 in the thing. which is basically like $500.
Yeah,
$450, $500.
1985 bucks.
No place to return. I was like, well,
my ticket was $50. How much is the ticket? I stole your tickets, by the way. I didn't mean to do that.
It was in pounds.
Your tickets are. Ticket was £5.
Whatever that
includes was. Includes a £20 donation.
So £25, roughly what, $40?
Maybe $40.
$40. My ticket says $50 American. Yeah.
Right,
on.
Right. Okay. So it's about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But
so
get this.
I said Yorkshire puddings on me tonight, so it was all good, you know.
We tried to find ID and there was nothing in there. It was just a billfold full of cash. So we realized that the American Bar Association was in town. We couldn't even get a hotel if we wanted. There was a cancellation at this place that was a gorgeous hotel. It was a Holiday Inn. Where was this, Dave?
Swiss Cottage.
That's actually stationary.
King Henry's Road, or 128 King Henry's Road.
That's where we were. And Dave and I, and you can show them the pictures.
Yeah,
we ended up going downstairs. We got a suite.
Enough said.
Oh, you had a bar.
Right.
Look at little David in there. Look at that.
You didn't have to give credit cards.
And the one before was the shower from the place we stayed the night before. With the bullet shells.
Yeah, right.
But
I'm going to find the pictures from our 86 adventure in Scranton.
Right. And there's there's me hanging out. Where's us?
Look at Richard's hair. Look at that.
So we ended up.
You were styling. Looked like styling Americans in London.
Yeah, then there was. I don't know where that was. Yeah, this
that's
is us.
Cuban. Yeah,
yeah, Cuban cigars. We ended up having a prime rib dinner and smoking some Cuban cigars, sitting on the balcony.
That's right. You couldn't do Cubans here
this
back
is,
in the day.
This like, is the night like, before.
All right, so in the summer of 85, I had begun interviewing rock stars at the end of 84.
Mm-hmm.
I did my Geddy Lee and Triumph and Kiss. October, November, December of 84. I was in high school. I graduated in June. This guy comes to me at the Choice magazine, and I had done an REO Speedwagon piece for him and a Survivor piece for him earlier, and I went to Live Aid. He's like, you went to Live Aid, write a review.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't really know how to write a review, but I did, and I wrote all of these words, and 40 years later, I haven't read it. I still haven't read it in the 4 days since I found this this piece here, but my bitch about it was made for television. So being there as a 16-year-old guy, I felt like the whole thing was, because it was.
Yeah.
It was made for television.
Yes.
At that time, I wasn't ready to accept that. So the first 10 paragraphs here were about me bitching about how it was made for television. So this is a terrible 16-year-old review.
16-year-old, right.
Yeah, REO Speedwagon appeared sluggish, Judas Priest rocked away, and Rick Springfield danced into the crowd during Human Touch. High Noon proved fantastic as Brian Adams took down the house with an inspiring version of Tears Are Not Enough, a song he wrote with Geddy Lee, a song he wrote and performed with over 20 of Canada's rock stars for Africans' Famine Relief. The Beach Boys then clogged up the 800 phones with an uppity versions of Surfing USA and Help Me Run. Keep in mind, the television was a telethon.
Yep.
Right.
I forgot that.
Yeah,
exactly.
I'm glad I read that out loud because it was they were begging for money all
exactly.
day.
That's right.
Exactly. Oh, okay. I mean, that's lost in all of this.
That's why you saw that.
Like,
that's
I don't
really
think
what
we
that
said
was that poster, Capital One,
absolutely.
All that stuff.
Dire awesome Straits donations. On the big screen with my pals David and Richard over in London. And George Thorogood were disappointing. From the London show, U2 and Queen were amazing. All right.
Yeah.
Even on Diamond Vision,
yes,
I said.
Right,
although
right.
Bono's face and voice faded out halfway through Sunday Bloody Sunday, much of they lost the audio.
Right.
They lost the audio in JFK. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. We didn't lose audio.
Freddie Mercury of Queen had the London crowd eating out of his hands during the chorus of Radio Gaga. We will rock you, rock JFK as much as it did Wembley.
Yeah. And the,
our stadium was going as crazy as yours.
And the ground was shaking at ours.
Yeah. David Bowie's London set was fabulous as he rolled through. Dolby, I love you. it's your fault.
Yeah.
The chorus, let's see here, of TVC 1-5, Rebel Rebel, and finally a Get Up and Dance version of Modern Love. The crowd sat through Simple Minds, Don't You, impatiently waiting The Who's Resurrection.
Yes.
Because The Who had already done their real fun.
That was their farewell tour.
They did
a few years
exactly.
Right. Yeah. And then they reunited.
Just farewelling again and again and again.
Right.
Finally, at 3 p.m., Pete, Roger, John, and Kenny appeared, much to the delight of the JFK audience. My generation had them rocking until the big screen went dark after the first course. They had tech problems at JFK.
Yes, they did.
Promoter Bill Graham appeared to say, we are having satellite problems and we'll try to get things straightened out. So we lost The Who in Philly.
Wow.
He did, and the show went on to end on Rain on Me and again, won't get fooled again.
Where it rained.
The Who was, well, let's say not the Who, and just after a half an hour of rehearsal, how could they be? I took a cheap shot at Roger.
Yes, you did. Sorry, Roger.
Pride went. Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders brought the crowd back to life with the harmonica-led middle of the road. Yep. Madonna strutted her stuff at 4:20. Interesting time, right?
Yep.
Performing sexy but non-revealing versions of Holiday and Get Into the Groove. The British finale, I called it disappointing. I'm sorry. Paul McCartney's microphone going out and no Beatle reunion. We all thought that George
and it could have. John not been killed 5 years earlier, the Beatles, without question, would have reunited for that show in Wembley. I guarantee it.
A spiffy-looking, young-looking Eric Clapton bowled over the masses with Layla, but where was cocaine? He probably left it home due to good taste. His set was highlighted by a big-screen close-up of the drummer, who just happened to be Phil Collins, the world of the day.
Yep.
Collins went on to do his own set, Against All Odds, in the air tonight, and a zillion balloons as Dick Clark and the ABC cameras led into television.
Again,
it goes back to the television.
Right.
Led Zeppelin partially reunited with style as Page and Plant rocked into rock and roll. Then Plant yelled for the crowd's request, Stairway, of course, but they ignored and played the classic Whole Lot of Love. Jimmy Page strolled through Stairway to Heaven just like he did so many times before. Crosby, Stills, and Nash appeared with Neil Young. Duran. LeBron's voice broke horribly during the View to
Kill.
Watch that. It was really, really bad. Duran was not very good. They were not very good. You were in bed.
Probably.
We already passed
out
once, right?
Passed out.
Patti LaBelle. So you didn't... You were asleep in London? You didn't watch the end
no,
of the
we, no, we actually watched Zeppelin, I think, in that bar at the hotel.
We watched the Phil Collins stuff, right. We went to a hotel bar after we left.
Tina Turner did State of Shock with Mick Jagger. State of Shock. They did Just Another Night, Lonely at the Top.
Dancing in the Streets.
They did Miss You. They did Miss You.
Yeah, right.
And they did, let's
Tina
see
was
here.
Awesome.
And then people were yelling for Bruce Springsteen, but he never appeared. And then Ron Wood and Keith Richards did Blowing in the Wind with Bob Dylan. Yeah. And then Lionel Richie and Harry Belafonte. That's it. We are the world.
There's
my review.
There you go.
Well, I'll show
you. I ripped the Who. I ripped it. Jesus, I'm terrible.
Well, I'll show you something.
It was like you were crying on the London acts, though. I mean, but then again, you couldn't see half of it.
I'm going to leave you with this.
I can't believe I gave you a bumper sticker. That's so sweet.
Yeah, it was.
50 cents I gave the Live Aid bumper sticker.
Well, here's some of the things this spurned
this is,
on.
This is $10 on the internet. I priced it the other day.
Oh, is it?
God.
Yeah, it's true.
Check here's
it.
Some of the things this spurned on. First, because of the Who playing at Live Aid, it reunited them. This is one of their precipice shows.
Okay. So they went together again. This is the 89 Who getting
the,
together.
Well, right. It was
Nordoff Robbins benefit over at Radio City Music.
That's okay. What HBO filmed that.
I remember that.
That was where they did Tommy cover to cover.
Nice. All right.
And that was the Kids Are All Right
tour. And
Kenny
was out of the band at that
point.
And
then I found this.
This is the show we went to.
That's the show
All right. June 15, 1986 in East Rutherford. This is the famous Scranton story that'll never be told.
Right. And if you turn the backside, see it shows all the acts there.
All right. So, yeah. Brian Adams, Joan Baez was
Joan
the person.
Right.
I said Joni Mitchell.
Yeah. Right.
Joan Baez, Jackson Browne, Miles Davis, Peter Gabriel, Neville Brothers, Lou Reed, Sting, Sade, absolutely.
Right.
Fela, Carlos Santana, Pete Townsend. Yep. So, that was something. Look
how young he is there.
I have all my ticket stubs in my
And then this was something. This was the program for Paul McCartney, his world tour right after it. And at the very back
so
of it.
So I met McCartney. I was.
Let me show you one thing.
I was at the press conference. I asked Paul a question.
Okay.
Once in my life, and he signed a Rolling Stone for me. It was underneath RFK Stadium. So this was in 88, and there's a whole Live Aid. Look at this.
He wrote about his experience at Live Aid. That's Paul's experience.
This is Paul's story in Paul's magazine for his tour.
Right.
This was 87 or 88, probably, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And I went there with Mom and Dad and Dave.
Robbie McIntosh doing the guitar, the whole deal, right? Paul did, I gave you this.
That's right. I
threw out 100 of these. This was the VMA. This was the night Sean Penn almost killed me with Madonna. Yep. Backstage, I had a camera.
Wow.
The Hooters hit me out in their dressing room this night. This was at the Palladium in New York.
Huh.
And I met Andy Warhol this night.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. That must be an experience.
Yeah. And Mark Knopfler was a dickhead to me this night. So I remember that, too. So
okay.
You don't forget.
Okay. Yeah.
But I was in the press room with Tina Turner this night. Tina Turner debuted, We Don't Need Another Hero this night for the MTV Video Awards.
Okay.
And I was in the pit. This was the night that the Cars won all the
and this is right after Live Aid.
That was my album, exactly.
The point I was making is Live Aid affected a lot of
11 months later.
Right. This, and then, of course, obviously.
Live Aid affected everything.
It was a groundbreaking event.
I mean, festival shows now are a dime a dozen.
Right.
I mean, this was really the first really big one since Woodstock.
I mean, Ocean City's got five of them.
Absolutely. But for cause. For cause.
Even cause, basically.
Okay,
yeah.
For a cause.
Yeah.
Okay, this change. Because as a result of Live 8 came Farm Aid, you know, with John Cougar and all that, and Willie Nelson.
Live 8?
A lot of spins off
right.
Live 8.
Live 8, yep. Live 8, right. But you can't repeat. We were there, both of us.
All right.
All three of us.
I'm going to wrap this up so we can drink some beer. We're out here at 1623. We're four old guys, young guys. Telling stories from 40 years ago this week. Live Aid is a real thing. It happened. This guy was in London. I was in Philly. We've had tickets. We're doing all the fun things. This shirt, you brought me this shirt. I wore it until it wore out. I want to end this with a little bit of love for someone that involved your father, your business. You were promoters for a minute. Sit down, relax. We're together. Pat D'Anicio.
Yes.
Thank you, Pat.
Pat D'Anicio. Yeah. What Pat, you got any Pat story? You got a smithereen story?
Oh, boy.
Too many. Pat was, I think I got him his first Maryland crab cake. You being the crab cake.
It was
cake
an Angelina's crab cake.
Angelina's, exactly.
Greenmount Station right here in Carroll County does an Angelina's crab cake. So
if
you're dying for an Angelina's style crab cake, go to Greenmount Station. You will do that.
But Pat was a class act. And he helped us to raise money for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation.
Yeah.
Dave and I, we promoted a show in Baltimore. We put him in a big venue at Towson Center. And we raised a lot of money for CF that night. We did a press conference with 98 Rock. And we were so appreciative to everything that Baltimore did for us. And, Ness, I got to tell you, you played a big part in that.
Okay? I tried to do my best.
It wasn't about doing your best. It was you doing what you do. Okay,
that's my best.
And thank God my mother and father were there to witness that with all of us together. And the Smithereens, who were up and coming bands at that point, were so appreciative. Yeah. And I remember
the press conference was at the Sheridan.
Exactly.
And I remember the night after going to see them playing at University of Delaware. Pat's like, "Come on, man, you got to go up and see
Stone
us play."
Stone Balloon, baby.
It's just a bunch of the balloon. That's right. That's right.
Man, we had some good times at the Smithereens, boys. But
that's right.
You know that period of time in life and my backstage Hammerjacks, rock and roll, and just all of that stuff. But
we always included you. And that
we were always sort of together in all of the soup of all of these memories and pictures.
Right.
And I wish we took more pictures. Right?
Yep. You have the ability. Pictures, it wasn't like that. I wasn't counting
our phones with us.
Right, you never had a phone. But now here, some 40 years later, we all get to reminisce about a moment that changed the world, and this is the proof of it. Instamatic camera pictures, a program, a t-shirt, a story about losing
him.
So
here's the t-shirt. Ready? So Pat D'Anicio of the Smithereens. I had the other Live Aid shirt, which was the Philly shirt.
I have that too.
So
you gave me one of those too.
I got you a Philly shirt.
I have my Philly shirt.
You gave me a London shirt.
Yes.
And I think that was our quid pro quo.
Right,
and
that's bumper sticker.
I gave you a bumper sticker.
Right, yeah.
We haven't traded concert tickets, but I'm still working on that. So 40 years later. D'Anicio... I'm on their tour bus for years, right? I had a backstage laminate with the Smithereens through all of their Green Thoughts 10, all the tours they were on. And I would join them at the Belly up in San Diego, or I'd come see them at the Stone Pony, wherever they were. I would just show up because I could. I didn't even have to call them. I would just walk backstage because
I had your laminate.
I'm on their tour bus, and D'Anicio would say, so this is 85 was Live Aid.
Yep.
Are you familiar with Heavy Metal Parking Lot?
Okay.
Heavy Metal Parking Lot, I'm going to Google it up for you because I want you guys to Google it, okay? And just so you know what it is, it was a movie. And it was
not Heavy Metal. This is Heavy Metal Parking Lot.
Heavy Metal Parking Lot is a 1986 documentary. It was filmed at the Capitol Center. It was made by a fellow who's my Facebook friend now that I've been trying to have on the show. Mm-hmm. They've been having the 40th anniversary of that because we're getting up on that, right?
Wow.
It was filmed at a Judas Priest concert in the parking lot of metalheads.
Hmm.
Okay? So everybody
wait
had
a second.
Out.
I've seen this.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
It's a 30-minute
I think
film.
You showed this to me. No. I know what you're talking about. Yes.
Jeff Krulik is the guy.
Yes.
By the way, have you guys gotten the Capitol Center table coffee table book? Do it.
No. Yeah.
Okay. Buy the just Google the Laurel Boys. It's called the Laurel Boys. I have a copy. It's one of the most amazing books ever. It's $50. It's value.
Right.
Trust me.
Right.
Bound ticket stubs from through the era, pictures of wrestling circus, rock and roll, the Eagles, Elvis.
Awesome shows down there, absolutely.
Bill Clinton's inauguration, Ronald Reagan's inauguration, just all of it, right?
Yeah.
So Heavy Metal Parking Lot is a documentary short, 1986, features interviews with several small groups of young heavy metal fans gathered for a tailgate party at a Judas Priest docking concert on May the 31st, 1986.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
So this film had an afterlife on VHS, okay?
Right.
So in the early 90s, I would be with the Smithereens places, and they would all say to me, dude, you're in, Maceris would say, dude, you're in Heavy Metal Parking Lot.
Right.
I didn't go to that show. I didn't go. No, dude, dude.
You're in there.
You're wearing the Live Aid Philly shirt. Did you go to Live Aid? I think the Mizzy started with, did you go to Live Aid? I'm like, yeah, I went to Live Aid.
You're in there.
You're in Heavy Metal Parking Lot, my friend. You know how
that's Mike, right?
I could do all three of them. I could do Jimmy and Dennis, too.
Yeah.
But mainly Mike and Dennis, or Mike and Pat. I'm in some, I think I was in Vegas with them on a bus to Phoenix to do a show in Tempe. I was like doing the Stillwater that I brag about doing for years,
right?
But this is what, might have been on radio by then, early 90s maybe, 91, 92, 93. And Pat's like, my friend, you're in this film. It is you.
Sure. It's your doppelganger,
dude,
if not.
Unreal.
I want everybody out there. And I had Kevin Leonard on, who wrote the book with Jeff Krulik. Jeff Krulik's involved in this Capitol Center book, too. He made the film. He was a Wayne's World, Prince George's Community College TV guy who had a camera in 86. He had a pro camera in 86, so he went to the parking lot to film this iconic film.
Yeah.
The first 40 seconds are his car going into the parking lot and sort of filming the tailgating that's going on a May 31st night in the Eagle lot at the Capitol Center off Landover Road.
Yeah.
And damn, if there is not a young dude, not in that shirt, in the Philly shirt.
In the Philly shirt, right. Which is different, right.
With my haircut, my
look, like you.
My height, and the back
and
of the
he swears
truck,
it was you.
It's not me.
Yeah,
right.
It's
a doppelganger.
It's a doppelganger.
It looks just like me.
That's
and they
crazy.
Put the videotape in, because they watched the videotape pissing themselves
on a
right,
right. It's
because like, look at these metal assholes. They thought it was me the whole time. And they, to this day, if Pat were alive, he would say,
right.
That's you, my friend.
Right, that's you.
It was not me.
I swear, it was not me.
One me. It looks
just like you.
So if you go, you can watch it on YouTube.
Check it out.
I'll watch it.
You can watch it.
I'll
40
watch
seconds
it.
In, you'll see a kid in a little
But what are the
shirt,
chances?
And the two of you are going to say, that's Nestor.
That's Nestor.
You're going to swear it's me, but it's not me.
Or you're on something really good, and you don't even remember the fact that you were really there.
It was the Live Aid shirt that gave me away.
Exactly.
But I don't have it anymore. It would be worth $500 if I had it. David Abrahams has been my friend forever. Richard's been my friend. Richard's been my friend longer, because David was like 11 when Richard and I met, when we were like 16 or 17, camping out for...
Billy Joel.
It might have
been.
Was it Billy Joel?
It was Billy Joel.
It was Billy Joel.
Then Billy Joel.
Right,
and then everything after that.
So we met in the summer of 83.
My senior year of high school. I was 18.
Love you guys, man. Love you guys. Group hug. David and Richard are good men. That shirt smells like 1985.
Does it? Yeah.
Sort
of looks like it.
It has that musty.
That's
the
moss.
Does it smell like Wembley?
It's only Wembley.
So I saw the greatest little clip of reel on Facebook this week, and I've been using it for any. Do you like my long hair, or do you not like it? You don't care.
I love it.
Okay.
Dude, I think it's you.
It totally
so
is.
So, David Bowie told this story on a British show. I shared it. You can follow it. Just put David Bowie, Mick Jagger story.
Yeah.
So, Bowie's telling this story, and it's probably in the 90s, maybe late 80s. He's not Thin White Duke, but he's between Serious Moonlight and Tin Machine.
Okay.
And he's on a show, and someone asked him about his rock and roll history. He said, I saw that Rolling Stones at Hammersmith Odeon or a place, and we were there in 1964. They were opening for another band. I think they were opening for Little Richard. And we're in the front, and I saw an insult that affected me. This is my Bowie, you know.
Wow.
He said, Mick Jagger was on stage, and I was a fan of the Stones. You know, they were not big band. No one. There were maybe 20 of us up against the front. And a fan said the most awful thing to Mick. He said, cut your long hair.
And his response.
And Bowie said, this is Bowie doing Mick. Mick said, what, look like you?
What, look like you? Right. I'm not dead yet.
So that's Bowie in 1964 doing,
right.
What, look like you?
Look like you.
So anyone that's giving me that cut my hair thing,
right.
My thing, that, that's almost. Learned this about 3 weeks ago. I just saw this video.
That's great stuff. It.
What,
that's
look good. Like you? Look like you?
I think that's t-shirt worthy, man.
Live Aid creates memories. Friendship creates memories. And,
yes,
you know, for anyone who told their children in the 80s, you can't camp out for concert tickets. You don't know what kind of people you'll meet out there. These guys. A toast to Live Aid from
cheers,
London
man.
To...
40 years later here, Dave. We need beers.
I got my beer.
I had some fancy drink they took away
cheers,
from me.
Cheers, man.
Here, pour a little in, and there you go.
From 16, there we go. This is a little stout.
All right,
to get it out. Stout to
and
get
there
it
you
out.
Go.
There
stout go. To get
stout
out.
Stout to get it out.
Stout to get out.
From 1623, my friends at the Maryland Lottery, you get a Lucky 7 doubler. David, you get a pressure luck, Richard, because you're older and you're pressing your luck. We're signing off after an hour of Live Aid stories. Pressure luck there.
There you go. I'm pressing
my luck. I'm going to press my luck at Zeke's Coffee on Friday, and then I'm going to press my luck into 27 of my favorite things to eat during the 27th anniversary of WNST and Baltimore Positive. Nothing more Baltimore Positive than talking some Live Aid here over an ice cold stout. Signing off from 1623. We got plenty ahead. Luke is at Ravens training camp, and I'll be back with some more lottery tickets to give away. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking rock and roll. What? It look like you.
What? Look like front? No.